You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
Welcome to episode 206 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 99, Catwoman number 25, Detective Comics 1027, Justice League number 53, and Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC has announced that DC Universe will now be known as DC Universe Infinite, a premium comic book subscription service debuting on January 21st, 2021. DC Universe Infinite will also be available worldwide starting in the summer of 2021.
I mean, we've seen this coming for, I would say, at least a year now, right?
Yeah, quite a while.
I'm glad this is the way that it played out, because we knew ultimately that HBO Max was going to get everything. We just didn't know what that would look like. To me, this is the best case scenario.
Yeah, I agree. With the announcement of DC Universe becoming a digital comic platform, the original content that was on there, like Titans, Young Justice, Doom Patrol, Harley Quinn and stuff, they're all moving to HBO Max. So they released that news too. Which isn't surprising. That's where I would have moved it to too.
So it's not surprising, but then also it is good news though, because it reconfirms that stuff's just not going away.
Exactly.
Because despite the fact that this app probably was never going to last long term, they put out some pretty good stuff. And so I'm glad to see that, you know, a lot of it's going to serve, like, it's not all folding with the app. Really, the only casualty was Swamp Thing.
Yeah. And I've heard rumors that they might be trying to bring it back too. So I don't know. Those only rumors right now.
Right. But I wouldn't rule it out, because it was fairly well liked, and I would imagine at minimum that season will move over to HBO Max, and I feel like if they get any traffic on it, they might bring it back, because in theory they'd have a better, like, that's part of a wider financial umbrella, right? Like, I don't know exactly,
right.
But I would assume in theory they may have access to more money and maybe a more willingness to keep that show going than before.
Yeah. All right, and other DC news. Harley Quinn animated series is renewed for season 3 on HBO Max. That wasn't surprising to me.
No, I mean, it's Harley Quinn, which is one of DC's biggest properties at this point. And then also, the show's pretty well reviewed. I've only seen bits and pieces, but yeah, I mean, I'd have been stunned if that didn't get picked back up. The show would have to be bad, frankly, and it's not, so there's just no way.
Yeah, I keep seeing people raving about it recently on social media, so I'm going to have to check it out. All right, up next for DC News, HBO's Watchmen wins 4 Emmys, including Best Limited Series and Best Lead Actress. That's pretty cool.
And it's very well deserved. I mean, that show is so good. I think the crazy thing with this is that it's a superhero property, and it was the favorite. And it's hard to imagine another movie that's been like that, or superhero property that's been like that, except for Heath Ledger's Best Supporting Actor win. And I guess the other Joker, too. Joaquin Phoenix. But this is really the first time like outside of an actor's just stunning performance that people have been like, yeah, no, this is probably gonna win stuff that I can think of in terms of superhero properties.
Yeah, and I'm excited to check it out. We're going to be talking about Watchmen here in a few weeks, so on the podcast. So I'm excited about that. You've raved about the show, so.
I can't wait for you to see it, Drew. It's such a good show. It's so clever in the way that they chose to do the Watchmen story, in a sense that they chose not. So it's not the Watchmen comic, and I think that was a smart decision. But that's also incredibly risky, right? Because you're not leaning on that story. You're trying to tell your own, and you know how that's not any good. It's gonna piss a lot of people off, to say the least. So
Yes.
they were walking an extremely tight rope, and the fact that they pulled it off is, I think, really impressive.
Yeah, it is. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC introduces Justice League Viking for Endless Winter. An ancient Justice League which consists of Hippolyta, Swamp Thing, Black Adam, and a semi-obscure DC character named Viking Prince. This team bands together in the past to take on the Frost King. So apparently that's going to be part of the backstory of that miniseries.
It's definitely something that's interesting, and both DC and Marvel have done things like this in the past. It was a couple of years ago or so, not that much longer, where Marvel was doing like a really like ancient times Avengers team. And then DC, actually, when the New 52 first came out, they had an ongoing book that was set in the medieval period. I can't remember what the title of it was. But it was essentially a medieval Justice League squad. And it had certain characters that you'd expect to see. They're like, oh shoot, Vandal Savage was actually a hero, was on like the good guy team. And some other, I think I'm almost positive Shining Knight was there. Gosh, I can't remember what that book was called because it didn't last super long. But it was right at the beginning of the New 52. There was this really concerted effort that all 52 comics were intertwined in some way. And so the genesis, obviously Flashpoint starts the New 52, but the genesis of this New 52 world was Darkseid's invasion. And you kind of see like parallels of that, or like references to that in the different books. So like Earth 2 that I've talked about before is also started by Darkseid's invasion of that Earth. I can't remember exactly how it tied in, but the medieval team was also dealing with ramifications of that. Like there was, all of these books were really tied together pretty tightly at the beginning, which was not sustainable, as we saw in the long run with it. But it was an interesting book.
Yeah, sounds like it was cool. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The next evolutionary leap in the Thunderverse has arrived. The Ring of Thunder is a whole week's wrestling in a half hour.
What?
The Ring of Thunder is a whole week's wrestling in a half hour.
What?
Every show.
What?
What?
What? What?
You come up around here wedding in sexy Thor's yard like he's anything but the hammer swinging, burrito eating, mic blazing, marking out but never tapping out Lord of Thunder, like you would do anything but sit down, open your ears, and take in the Ring of Thunder wherever you find your podcasts, like you would find any other podcast in the Thunderverse or the ESO network.
We're back, but before we get into comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you,
for
you.
All right, let's talk Batman number 99. So this issue opens up with the Joker carrying a green briefcase. He hops into a Joker-painted Hummer stretch limousine and orders the driver to take him to Ace Chemical. Joker talks to Punchline on his cell phone, and he wants the movie theaters filled. He also tells Punchline that the clowns get $1,000 for every dead body they bring to him, and if it's a bat, he'll pay $1 million. Now we see Batman has a meeting with the Bat family, which includes Dick Grayson, Batgirl, Red Hood, Red Robin, Spoiler, Orphan, Signal, and Harley Quinn. Batman explains that Batwoman and the Gotham PD have already retaken Wayne Enterprises and saved Lucius Fox. Batman tasks the family with rescuing people from the movie theaters and stopping the violence happening in the streets. I'm going to stop here for a minute because I just want to take note. They have Red Robin in this and not just Tim Drake as Robin. So I'm guessing he's going to be Red Robin and not just Robin like they said in Young Justice.
No, you're right. And I'm glad you pointed that out because he is also referred to as Red Robin in Detective Comics that we're going to talk about in Bendis's story, no less.
Yes. So that.
So it's funny that I was talking about this last podcast. I was like, I understand if they don't want to keep the Red Robin thing. Like, I liked it. And then they were keeping it the whole time.
So we also see Batman gives Nightwing a copy of his costume, which is good because that costume he's wearing in this sucked.
Yeah.
Batgirl decides she's going back to the clock tower to coordinate their efforts, and Harley Quinn is coming with Batman to Ace Chemicals because she wants to kill the Joker. We also see that Catwoman is going to the underbrokers with Penguin, Riddler to steal back the money from Joker. And then Batman goes to confront Joker at Ace Chemicals, and we find out that Joker has resurrected Alfred with nanites, and Joker's also wearing his version of a bat suit. Basically, this issue was setting up the final issue, which is going to be next time, Batman 100.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think that this issue was poorly written necessarily, but it felt more like an issue that was put in to justify and almost force your hand into reading the other books. It felt to me more like a business plan than an actual issue. And by that, I mean, it forces you to read. If you want to know what Catwoman does, you have to read Catwoman. And then having read Catwoman, I can tell you that that is a waste of time. Like, it introduces this, what frankly is an important part of the story, Bruce Wayne's money. That's like the crux to this plot, right?
Right.
Catwoman takes care of that, and it's whatever, there's nothing interesting that happens in it. It's exactly what you think. Catwoman gets the money back, like, that, you know what I mean? So, like,
right.
It's not, in my opinion, a worthwhile story, but they force you to have to read another book. And then the rest of most of this issue is like tying in what was happening in Nightwing and Red Hood. It brings that story back into the fold.
Yep.
It references the Detective Comics story with Batwoman.
Yep.
That we had read. And so it's basically just like, if you haven't read these,
go check them out.
You should go read them. But I have to say, like, if you want to read the entire story, yes, do so. But if you're reading comics on a budget, I can't recommend that you do that. And I felt frustrated by this issue because it was trying to force your hand into reading stories that are skippable. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, yep, like it's forcing your hand to read like something that's really good, something you should definitely read because, A, it ties in a lot, and also it's a good story. It's forcing you to read stuff that ties in, but they're not that good. Like, they're not... I don't think need to have read any of the tie-ins for this, to be totally honest with you. Even the Catwoman thing. If I just tell you Catwoman gets the money back, that's it. That's all you need to know from that story, because nothing really happens besides that.
Yes. Yeah, I have to agree with you. Are you done talking about Batman?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Catwoman number 25, since Cletus already told you about it. Yeah. So, Catwoman, with the help of Penguin and Riddler, breaks into Gray's Willock and Crane building in Gotham's financial district. It's a legitimate face for the underbroker, and once inside, Catwoman sets up equipment and steals back the money the Joker stole, plus a little more. But we see she double crosses both Riddler and Penguin. That was no surprise. We see that Penguin had already figured out Catwoman's escape route and was ready. Catwoman gets shot, and if it wasn't for Detective Hadley from Villa Hermosa showing up, Catwoman would have been caught. And the detective states that he'd come to arrest Selina, but changed his mind after she was shot. And Catwoman escapes his apartment while he's getting something out of the fridge. That was just weird. Him just showing up out of the blue and saving Catwoman.
Yeah, that was poor just storytelling. There was a better way to do that.
Yes, there was. And it could have easily involved anybody in the Bat family. The next thing we know, Selina is driving Luke's Fox's limo. And she tells Luke that a large sum of money is sitting in a Grand Cayman account in his father's name. The details are on a flash drive that are in the glove compartment. And that part of the money belongs to Wayne Enterprises. And the other part, Catwoman wants distributed among Gotham's low-income population, thanks to Gotham's criminals. So basically we find out that the money that the Joker stole just goes right back to Bruce Wayne. And looks like we're going to go back to the normal status quo.
Yeah, what I thought it was, I was a little disappointed by that, if I'm being completely honest, because I know you and I talked about, I speculated that maybe there might be some status quo change to Bruce Wayne's money from this story. And it, not only does that not seem like the case, it felt like an extra cop-out, because she was like, yeah, I took his money and gave it back to Bruce, but I took extra money and distributed that to, you know, low-income families that need it. And it felt like a little bit of a cop-out, like she couldn't have given some of Bruce's money. You know, the dude has just a little bit of money. You know, I think he could have probably, I don't know, just it felt weird, if that makes sense. Like she was making sure the rich guy got to keep all his money, but the poor people still get their money because it comes from criminals, but the good rich guy, you know, he didn't do anything, so he gets to keep all of it. That felt, I don't know, that felt a little odd to me, I guess. Maybe not the right time for that story.
Yeah, well, yeah. But honestly, she also knows he's Batman, and he needs that money to fund being Batman, too. So, plus all the fact that you have all the workers at Wayne Tech that need to be paid.
And I'm not saying that she should have given it all away. I'm just saying that it was, I think I would have either just not mentioned that. I wouldn't have, if you just want Bruce to get his money back, I'm fine with that. But then to include the extra thing, like, oh, and I also stole other money to give to poor people, recognizes the fact that poor people need the money, but doesn't, like, you know, it's like trying to have its cake and eat it too. That's what it felt like to me.
Okay. I see what you're saying. All right, well, the rest of the Catwoman issue deals with Catwoman returning to her roots in Alleytown, where she recruits some kids to become criminals. She just like she used to work for Mama Fortuna, she's going to teach these kids how to steal. And she bought the building that is called The Nest and will set up her criminal empire from here. I'm like, what? So are we ending the Batwoman, Catwoman thing and moving on to this new thing that I'm not even interested in reading?
Book. Certainly for the Catwoman book, that seems to be the case. What I'm wondering is, are we going to see essentially Batman and, it's in terms of books, Batman and the Catwoman books just doing their own thing with no regard to what the other's doing? Or is this the status quo change overall for Catwoman? I honestly wouldn't be surprised either way. Like, I could see them just basically deciding, like, screw it. We're going to do Catwoman's solo story on her own, and it's going to be as if she's not, you know, in Gotham all the time with Bruce. But then she's still in Gotham all the time with Bruce in the Batman book. I don't know. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, I could too, and I'm very curious to see what they do. I got to tell you, I'm not that interested in watching Catwoman's little empire with kids involved. But, I mean, I guess we could get some good stories out of it.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like... I mean, if she's the main character of her own book, she's got to be a protagonist still, right? Like, it's not... I don't think you can long-term have a book where she's a bad guy. Like, there's certainly you could do a mini-series or like, a short run where Catwoman is, like, the main character but is antagonistic. But I feel like over the long term, that's not generally why people would want to read a Catwoman book. I could be wrong. But I feel like if you have a Catwoman solo book, it... I don't know. I feel like it's better served if she's more... like, you know, at least
an anti-hero,
leaning on the good side. Yeah, yeah, anti-hero, but not in like, I think it's weird because I would describe a lot of her stories as an anti-hero, but not in the way that we usually think of, like, not like Punisher or Black Adam, right?
Right.
Like, morally, it's weird because she's like mostly a hero, but like maybe a little morally questionable. It's not, I don't know.
Yeah, because she likes doing heroic stuff, but she also likes stealing stuff, so
right, yeah, but she's not going to leave a trail of bodies behind her either.
Right, exactly. It's, you know, killing's not her thing, even though we have seen it once in a while in the past.
Right, yeah, oh yeah, I mean, certainly she'll do it, but she's not tearing through people like some other, like, you know, Wolverine, those sorts of like classic anti-heroes.
Right. So, I guess
anyway, I don't know. I was curious about this because it does feel to me maybe like this is what they're doing. They're sort of clearly the Joker War is they're using this to kind of reset the status quo for a lot of Bat characters, and they've been doing it kind of quickly, so to speak. Like, Tim is Red Robin again. They basically just snap their fingers and like, he's Red Robin now. And so in Nightwing, I mean, not quite snap their fingers, but pretty close, right? It was a fairly anticlimactic story that made him Nightwing again.
Right.
So he's just kind of, it's like, okay, he's Nightwing. So it wouldn't surprise me if as a result of this story, if they just sort of kind of like, you know, snap their fingers and like, and Catwoman's a thief again, and just kind of leave it at that without a whole lot of explanation. It would fit what they've been doing with a lot of these other Bat characters.
Yeah. I guess we'll just have to see how she plays out in the Batman title.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the problem with having her be in a relationship with Batman, which I like, is that it makes a solo Catwoman book harder to do continuity-wise. Like, if you want it to be in continuity, it's hard because her book should be about her. It should be a Catwoman book. But if in continuity she's in Gotham living with Batman, it's hard to do a solo Catwoman book that stays about Catwoman and the writer isn't tempted to make it a Batman book.
Right.
So I think at minimum the solo book needs to just be disconnected. And honestly, I really don't think it's the worst thing in the world if it's just disconnected, right? Like, who says it needs to be a continuity Catwoman story?
Yeah.
That's just
pretty much
I
the
like
series...
that she has a book.
The series was before, I mean, it didn't really have that much to do with Batman. It was connected very loosely.
Extremely loosely.
So.
Which was fine because, yeah. Again, that was the only way it was able to really focus and tell its own story. So I hope, because I like the status quo with Batman and Catwoman, I would like that to continue. But I'm not going to be upset if Catwoman book itself ignores that. That's fine. I like, just let it do its own story.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, let's move on to our next title this week. Detective Comics number 1027. And this is one of those big issues with lots of stories in it. And most of them weren't that good.
Big is an understatement. I was not prepared for this, Drew. I remembered a little too late into it because I didn't look ahead of time how many pages there were. I remembered like the second story in, I was like, oh yeah, this is an anniversary issue. And then I kept reading and I kept reading. And then I was like, wait, how long is this thing? And I was on like page 50. And so in my head, I was like, oh, I've got to be close to being done. Like, surely this isn't going to be that, like, it's not going to be that big. It was 150 freaking pages. Good Lord. It never ended.
I know. It drug on because some of the stories just were not good. Some of the artwork was not good. They had a lot of people on this book.
I can't believe, speaking of artwork, some of the artwork was obvious. I mean, in a book this big, they basically had the entire roster on it. So obviously you had some good art. But then, like, I can't believe the artist that they paired with King. I was like, are you kidding me? Pair that with, like, Wolfman or something. His story's going to be okay anyway. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
I got to tell you, I didn't like King's story in this one.
No, and I didn't particularly care for it either. And I honestly, I've said this a lot. The art makes a huge difference. I think if you put one of the usual artists that gets paired with King on that, I think that story's pretty good. And I don't think it necessarily would have been the best one, but I think it's pretty good with a better artist. But with the artist that it had, it just didn't fit. Like, the art was like a almost like an animated universe style, and that it just didn't fit.
It didn't.
I was very disappointed. As soon as I saw writer Tom King, and I was looking, as I'm reading that, I'm looking at the art that's on the page, I was like, oh no, this isn't right.
You could probably guess what my favorite story was.
It was the Tomasi one, right? At the beginning?
Nope. My favorite one was the Brian Michael Bendis story. And I start reading, and I'm like, I like flip back to the beginning. I'm like, this is Bendis' story? It was really good. I loved it. The Bat family, one by one, comes across the dead body of Detective Dungeon and works together to solve the case. We had Damian, we had Nightwing, Batgirl, Red Robin, Spoiler, Red Hood, and then finally Batman shows up. I love that story. I thought it was a good representation of the Batman family, and it was just a fun read.
Like we mentioned, this one is reiterated that it seems like Tim is Red Robin again, which I'm happy with. Like I said, I liked the name. It did. I also wanted to point out along with that. Did you notice, Drew? They continue to seem to have de-aged him. Like, he looks young.
Oh, Red Robin?
Yeah.
I
don't know if you noticed in this one. Like, he didn't look that much older than Damian.
Okay. I was happy they had Damian in it. Because of this week's comics coming out and them reiterating that Tim is Red Robin, I'm wondering if the Damian status quo is just temporary.
That's what I'm wondering, if it's a Teen Titans only status quo. Yeah, I agree with you. I assumed that this was going to be something that, I didn't think it would go on for super long, but I assumed that they were going to run with it, but it seems more like it's just a Teen Titans thing, which is a little surprising, but it's fine because, as I mentioned, I wasn't that enthusiastic about him not being Robin. I also like the Bendis story. The only thing that I would have liked is they never explained why they all went there.
Yeah, that's one thing they didn't explain. Bendis tried to spin it like it was coincidence.
Point of the first half of the story, but it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? Like it. I didn't understand. It almost like Bendis I'm sure he didn't, but it almost read like he had one idea for what the story was and then changed his mind halfway through and just made it a regular detective story. It was just odd. It's just the entire first half is them trying to figure out why they're all there, and then they just don't care.
Yeah.
So, it was one of the better actual detective stories. I hated Tomasi's. Was such a, I thought, so lazy. It was literally just like a, hey, do you want to go through the list of Batman villains?
Oh, man. I hated
bookended,
that one.
Was so dumb. It was like, I would have been less insulted if it had just been 12 pages of just like Batman villain portraits. Like, I would have enjoyed that more because it would have been less insulting. It would have been like, okay, that's fine. Because it was like he was pretending. Like, what I didn't like about it was that he was trying to convince you that he was telling a story, but he wasn't. He was really just like, hey, remember Scarecrow? Remember Mr. Freeze? Hey, you remember the Riddler? And then he threw in, like, buzzwords like, oh, it's Detective Comics, and people always want Batman to be a detective, so I'll throw in words like deducing, and that'll throw them off the scent that this isn't really a mystery at all. I felt like my intelligence was being insulted as I was reading that, and I felt insulted for other people reading it too.
Yeah, that was not a good one.
It was the lead story too. How was Bendis's not the lead story?
I don't know. That's a good question. One of the other stories I liked in this was titled Four. It was written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. Bruce Wayne plays golf in the rain with a man named Mr. Steele, who's trying to strong-arm Bruce into selling him a piece of property. And at the end of the story, we find out Bruce is wearing a wire to catch this dude. And then we see in between his dealings with this dude on the golf course, we see Batman taking down his criminal crooked empire. So I like that story too.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one too. I hope that she's going to be still. We know that DC is definitely moving to pay their writers less, let's just say. I hope that they at least keep her around occasionally. I'm sure she won't be like, we know her Aquaman book is ending, or at least her run on the Aquaman book is ending, but she's such a good writer. It would be a shame. And the thing I wish that I know that, like, Jim Lee gets it, right? The guy in charge of DC specifically.
Yes.
But I wish that the people above him recognize that when you have that writing talent, there is a correlation to, and artist talent, there is a correlation to the books selling. Like, if you want to save a buck and employ the D team, you're going to get D team sales numbers.
Yep. That's the truth.
One of the other stories I enjoyed was her husband's story, Matt Fraction, and Chip Zdarsky's the one with the Joker and the anniversary, the birthday gifts.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I liked it too, because I didn't the creative team credit for that one was at the end, and I was enjoying the story, and as I was reading it, I was like, man, this art style is familiar, but I can't place it. And I couldn't figure out. I was like, man, I know I've seen this art style, but it doesn't seem like a DC art style. And then I got to the end, and it was Chip, and I was like, oh, Chip mainly currently is doing a lot of writing over at Marvel, but then he's also been the artist on Sex Criminals with Matt Fraction for Image. They own the title together, and that was why I was like, oh. That's where I know that art style from. And it made me appreciate the story even more, because then I went back and was looking, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, no wonder I recognized it.
All right, I was interested in what you thought about Generations Fractured by Dan Jurgens. I mean, honestly, the story started off not that interesting, but when I got to the end of it, I was like, can we find out what's going on here? Because I like the idea of Calendar Man fracturing Batman into different time periods and what Booster Gold has to do with this story. So I'm interested in the continuation of the story, but this story itself with the Batman fighting the monsters and stuff, that part of it I wasn't interested in. But I'm interested in the time travel part of the story.
If I'm being honest, I don't have high expectations for the quality of the story. I think at best it'll be entertaining. I would be surprised if I was blown away by a Jurgens story at this point. That being said, I think there's a lot of potential for some really cool artwork. One of the things I appreciated with this story was when he like gets that initial time fracture or whatever, and he gets thrown back into like the original Batman, and you get that art shift.
Yeah.
That was cool. And I think there's some really interesting potential there within this generation story to do like what we saw in Dial H for Hero, where we saw a lot of comic era artwork referenced. I think this book has the potential to do a very similar thing. Like if we're seeing, you know, 60s era Batman, we would see that Silver Age style of artwork. I think that could be really cool. And I think that could be a selling point of the book. I think story-wise, if Juergens can at least keep it mediocre and we get interesting artwork like that, it could be decent.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, because I haven't heard anything about this before, seeing it in Detective Comics, if this is going to be a miniseries. It feels like it's going to be a miniseries and it's not going to be in continuity. That's what my feeling is. But I haven't heard any announcements about it at all.
I wondered myself if we know that there was, we know 5G is dead, right?
Right.
But part of me wonders if there were certain projects that got far enough along or DC thought were good enough that they didn't want to get rid of. And I couldn't help but wonder, like, this seems somehow would have been connected to that, right?
That does make sense. Interesting.
And so we know whatever was supposed to happen isn't happening, and I think we're all relatively grateful for that. But I couldn't help, and I could be way off. It could just be coincidence, but it was like, man, this seems like this would have been connected, because I mean it's literally called Generations.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if this was supposed to be in some, not necessarily central to it, but I wonder if it was supposed to be connected to whatever 5G was supposed to be, and then DC liked the story enough and figured, as a time travel story, well, screw it, we can still tell it and it can just be its own thing. I don't know. That's pure speculation on my part, but that occurred to me as I was reading it.
That's interesting. I also like the story called A Gift by Mariko Tamaki about the cop Batman saves in the Black Case book. And it's supposed to be continued in Detective Comics. So does that mean that this writer is going to be taking over Detective Comics now? That's the feeling I got.
That's the feeling I got. And let me tell you, I felt pretty excited, Drew. I was enjoying the story, don't get me wrong, but I can't. The best part of that story was when it said to be continued in Detective Comics. I was like, oh, really? Oh man, yeah. No, I'm interested, because I would assume I liked how well she was able to incorporate the cop into the story, because like he's not in it, like it's not that long of a story, but it was enough that I kind of want to see what happens with his character.
Yeah, I did too. So, really great job of doing that short story, I thought. And it's got me intrigued, excited that maybe we're getting a new writer on Detective Comics. Just, I'm sorry, Tomasi, as much as I like your Superman and Green Lantern stuff, your Batman stuff sucks. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Justice League number 53. I loved how the story started out with Robin trying to sneak up on Batman and surprise him. And we see that Dick Grayson, Robin, is hiding under the Batmobile, waiting to surprise Batman. But he gets a surprise when Batman is meeting up with the Justice League. Now, in the present, Nightwing comes across Detective Chimp, who is under attack by a bunch of creepers who work for the Batman Who Laughs. When Detective Chimp says he's Nightwing, you dolt, and a creeper replies, which one? I knew the writer was kind of taking a jab at the recent Rick Grayson storyline. I kind of like that. We saw Nightwing and Hawkgirl are on a mission to destroy Perpetua's throne, but they need help finding it, and Detective Chimp leads them to what used to be the Hall of Justice, where they find Lex Luthor, and of course, Hawkgirl's ready to kill him. Luthor tells them his story, and that to undo what he has done, he must free the Legion of Doom, who Perpetua is using to power her throne. Now, Lex Luthor also explains about the Omega Knight, who guards the Legion of Doom and Perpetua's throne. And on top of that, also helping to guard Perpetua's throne is the Mindhunter, who is an evil Batman version of the Martian Manhunter. And the issue ends with those two fighting. I'm very curious to see what you think of this issue.
If you are wanting to read everything to do with this story, by all means, you should check it out, because it's not bad. But again, if you're trying to figure out, like, from a budgetary standpoint, what's the most efficient way to read this story, I would skip this one. There's just not, I mean, there's nothing really about this story that matters. it's interesting. It's a really good world building thing. Like, in terms of if you were reading a collection, right, when this story is over and you get like the like deluxe edition or whatever that has all the tie-ins and whatever, it's an interesting story. And for that, I would like it. But if you're trying to pick like which ones you should read and shouldn't, this is extremely skippable.
I was just curious what your thoughts on it. I thought it was decent, knowing who wrote it. So, because it's a Williamson story, so I was pleasantly surprised it was better than what I usually expect from him.
I think a story like this is somewhat easy for him to resist some of his tendencies, like the insane myth building that he tries. My biggest problem with his Flash stuff was that he was trying to make everything big and epic, like every issue was going to be a monumental chapter in the overall Flash myth, that we are all going to remember all these different forces for decades, and all of us will remember these characters that he's introducing, and they're not. They're all just like single issue characters that he's giving undue importance to. There's a little bit of that, like the reveal of the Source Wall, the corrupted Source Wall Guardian was fine. Like, it made sense within the story, but then you're like, but then not only that, but Mindhunter. So like, that was a little bit of the Williamson signature to me, but it also fits with the, like, we've been getting that ridiculous introduction with this whole event, right? That's like,
right,
part of the DNA of it is just like, oh, and then there's this Bat character, and then there's this Bat character. So that felt reminiscent of some stuff I don't like with Williamson, but I thought this book was, it's tailored into a way that like is able to mask some of the stuff I don't like about his writing.
Fair enough. I was just very curious of what you thought of it.
The story just doesn't matter. Like, honestly, Drew, the story just doesn't matter enough for, you know what I mean? Like, it's a world building comic. It's perfectly, it's not great. It's certainly not one of the top stories within this event that they're doing, but it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's, if you're wanting that world building, you're wanting to get a little more, you know, see more of what these other characters in this world are doing, but it just doesn't matter enough to, you know, get that too deep into.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk Justice League Dark Apocalypse War.
Fans of podcast, I am Rusted Robot.
Rusted Robot is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Episodes in the hundreds with pop culture reviews and geek style news. I am Rusted Robot Podcast. You have come here for geek.
Will you listen?
Listen? For free?
No, we will run and we will live.
Aye, run and you'll live, and dying in your beds many years from now. Would you be willing to trade all those days and come back here for just one more listen?
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our Rusted Robot Podcast.
And we're back. Let's talk Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. Cletus, I gotta say, the Justice League Dark Apocalypse War brings the DC animated universe, which started with Flashpoint Paradox, to an epic conclusion. I thought it was a great conclusion to this series of movies.
Yeah, and I thought that the freedom it gave them in terms of what happens with a lot of these characters, I thought it really loosened them up, because it's the last one. You don't have to worry about any sort of status quo or, you know, like anything. You can just, it's an end, right? And
right.
Endings are always, in any superhero story, endings free writers up a lot, because they don't have to worry about what comes next, and they can just kind of do whatever they want with the characters. And you saw that a lot in this story. And I think you got a lot of really interesting things and a lot of surprising moments that we wouldn't normally get in a superhero story, let alone one of these animated movies.
To me, this movie didn't feel like it was based off of any comic that I could think of.
No, it definitely takes inspiration from certain things. Like, the Batman on the Mobius chair comes from the Dark Side War, which is the end of John's New 52 Justice League run. So you got some of the stuff like there's inspiration from some of those, but it's definitely its own story.
And I like that about this movie. So the movie opens up with Superman leading the Justice League in an all-out assault on Apocalypse, with the Teen Titans and Earth's other superheroes staying behind, acting as a home guard. We see that the opening credits begin just after the team was attacked by a new breed of parademons with the DNA of Doomsday. And once the credits end, the story kind of jumps forward 2 years to a bombed London, where Raven and a powerless Superman search for John Constantine. There's a team up you don't see: Superman and Raven. Right away, first of all, this is a post-apocalyptic story, which was kind of cool. We don't normally see that. We usually see the Justice League saving the Earth from becoming an apocalyptic story. So they lose, which was kind of cool to open up this different kind of world that we're not used to seeing, an Earth that's been attacked by Darkseid. And
the other thing that the team up did too, and especially once you include Constantine and Damian, is that they really had representatives of each of the sort of... I thought this movie in itself was a good story, but it was also a great bookend to all of these different stories they were telling. Like with Superman, you've got obviously the representative of the Justice League and also his Superman movies that they did. You've got Constantine representing the magic, the Justice League Dark movie. You've got Raven for the Teen Titans. You've got Damian also from that and also his Batman movies that he did. Later on, you get the Suicide Squad that had that one of their movies was set in this animated world. I thought they did a great job with that team of being representative of all of the work that all these, you know, these movies have done. It was sort of kind of boiled down into this weird ragtag team.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. One of the things we find out is that during the initial battle, John Constantine just leaves the battle when Zatanna is overtaken by Darkseid's forces. He just gave up and left. I'm like, dang. Very unheroic.
But, right, well, unheroic, but like in a really non-John Constantine way, which was such an interesting moment, because you're like, well, that's, even he's like, yeah, that's really out of character for me. I don't really know why I did that.
But it made it for an interesting story too, so I think.
The only thing I would have liked is I thought the reveal for what happened with that was a little, like, I would have, I don't know, liked maybe to have gotten another a 30-second flashback scene to, like, re-show us that scene and see Zatanna doing what she's, you know what I mean? Like, the way they just sort of, like, hand-waved it. And I would have liked maybe just even just a little bit more, like, showing us instead of just telling us, like, oh, it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, I guess they get us a tidbit more.
Like, I understand that. I'm not saying you change what happened, but, like, when Zatanna tells them what happened, I would have liked, like, if we could have gotten, like, a 30-second, we go back to the scene where we see him run away, but we actually see it from Zatanna's perspective. I would have liked that.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
I don't know. It would have, you know, that's what I'm saying. Instead of her just being like, oh, no, I did it. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, just a little bit, that 30 seconds extra of detail, I think, would have made it feel less sort of hand wavy, sort of just like, ah, whatever, it didn't matter.
Yeah, and it would have been interesting to see what she thought of that, because
it would have given that. I like things like that anyway, because it's always interesting. I think an interesting thing to do in movies and comics is to see the same scene but from a different perspective and see how that, like, how do you react to it that way. I think that's an interesting creative thing to do, and so I don't know. I was bummed that they didn't go that route.
I also liked how they portrayed Darkseid in this too. He was overly arrogant, and Batman was totally under his control. It felt strange to me for Batman to be totally under his control, but I mean, Batman sure played that part well, being Darkseid's second in command, basically.
The thing I also liked is that they resisted the urge. They definitely make you think that Batman's the mole.
Yeah, they did.
Because it's always him, right? He's always the one that's secretly resisting it, and he wasn't. It wasn't him. He was legit just under control. And I liked that twist, and I liked the fact that they resisted the urge to have Batman be the one resisting.
Right. We find out it's actually Lex Luthor. And of course, that kind of plays into his character, too, because we know Lex Luthor's kind of a flip-floppy character sometimes. Because he does things to suit himself.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be a pawn of Darkseid, but when he didn't have a choice, he was. And then, of course, he wanted to do what was right. It was interesting to see that at the beginning of the movie, Lex Luthor was part of the Justice League. And that kind of fits with the new 52 version of him, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So,
I can't remember which movie they established that in. Because I think I remember it, but I'm blanking. Was it Justice League Dark that we see him hop on that team?
No, because we in the Justice League Dark movies, it was the we saw more of the magic characters in that. We didn't really see the normal Justice League in that movie, except for Batman. Batman was in it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Man, I can't remember which one it is now, but he definitely there. I think we even reviewed it. One of the movies definitely establishes him as being on the team.
Yeah, and I don't remember either.
My favorite character in this movie, Drew, was King Shark. I can't tell you how quickly I attached to him. The second time he was like, King Shark is a shark, I was like, I love you and I need you to survive this entire movie.
My I think one of my favorite characters in this was Etrigan, because he was so freaking laid back. Basically, he's basically laid back the whole movie, just kind of following Constantine through the motions. And we finally see him show up to fight with his sword when Wonder Woman went to attack Constantine, and Etrigan finally kind of shows up to be other than just there drinking.
I enjoyed the fact that he was included in the first place. But yeah, I enjoyed his. He was pretty funny. I wish his death scene had meant more. Didn't it feel like Constantine could have pulled that trick out at any point and just like waited for Etrigan to suicide himself off of Wonder Woman, and then he's like, "All right, now I'll fix you."
Yeah,
it was a cool fight scene. I'm not complaining that was a fight scene that he lost to Wonder Woman. Like all of that was fine, but like. Constantine immediately followed that up by fixing her, and it's like you couldn't have done that before your buddy got killed, like seconds ago.
No kidding. And then the other thing that's funny is he just leaves Wonder Woman there to fight the rest of them.
Well, she wants them to. In his defense, Wonder Woman specifically wants the rest of them to leave, and she would hold them off.
I thought another interesting character in this was Damian. He didn't seem as arrogant as he normally does in this. I like that. I mean, he was still a tad arrogant, but I liked how they portrayed him in this movie better. And didn't we see him and Raven relationship stuffy in one of the other movies?
The Teen Titans ones.
Was it? Okay. I thought we did. Yeah. And I like how they played it out more in this one.
It starts in Teen Titans versus the Justice League, I think is the one that is Trigon is the villain in that. And then the other one was Teen Titans, the Judas Contract.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did have that one, didn't we? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I like how they portrayed Damian in this movie. And, I wish the comic book version would be a little more like the movie version.
it's interesting because some of the other Damian, a lot of the movies within this animated universe that they created are Batman movies, and Damian is
heavily featured throughout it. I would say he's one of the main characters of this whole arc. And he's usually pretty standoffish. I don't know that he's always necessarily as antagonistic as the comic version can sometimes get. But I feel like sometimes the problem we get in the comics, Drew, is that some writers don't know how to handle that. So he was made by Grant Morrison, or created by Grant Morrison. And he obviously knew what he wanted to do with that character. And I think other writers have also kind of gotten it. But then other people, I think, want to include Robin in the story. So you use Damian, right? And they don't really get much about him besides the fact that he's kind of a jerk. And so that's all they kind of focus on. And so you end up with this asshole but they leave all of the redeeming and like nice parts of the character out. Like one of the big things from Morrison that he introduces that other writers are inconsistent about showing is that he's an animal lover, right? Like he has a pet cow, bat cow in his Batman run, right?
Right.
But like the Damian that we're reading in Teen Titans, and not that I dislike the story, but that the Damian that we're reading in that story would not have bat cow.
Right.
So I think there's that side, that nuance to the character. I do think, like, I thought in this film universe, like you're saying, I feel like they got that nuance that, like, he's cold and standoffish like his dad is. He was raised by assassins, so, like, you have to cut the kid some slack. Like, he's not going to be the most, you know, gregarious person. But that he is, like, ultimately he is a kind-hearted person. Like, he did get, you know, his father's sense of morality, ultimately. So I agree with you. I think the movies get that, but I do feel like sometimes some of the comics we get, the writers miss that nuance of the character and just write him as an asshole.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I really enjoyed this more balanced character of Damian. So I wish we'd see more of that in the comics.
This was so good. I really enjoyed it. And I know we both enjoyed the last Justice League Dark one as well, which... It's funny that they labeled this Justice League Dark, because it's not really, like, Constantine is one of the main characters, certainly.
Right.
But it felt like it was more, they labeled it like that so that they could make it rated R, like the previous Justice League Dark one was, because it is very violent, which is fine, and it totally fits with the story. But I thought it was funny because it felt like they named it Justice League Dark so that they could get away with doing what they wanted with the story, not so much that it was actually a magic story.
Yeah, I have to tend to agree with you on that. I really enjoyed this, too.
But I am sad. I am sad that it's the end of this animated universe. Like I said, like a lot, there were a significant portion of this world was Batman movies. But you had Flashpoint, it starts with that, right? You have Justice League War, which I also really enjoy, which those two are both heavily based off of the, you know, Flashpoint and then the first Justice League story arc from the New 52. Those are, I mean, they're very close to what you see in the books. And then you get Throne of Atlantis, which was the next big Justice League story. That one wasn't quite as good as the first two, but we got some really good movies in this, and I understand why they would bring it to an end. They told a really good, there was a good story to tell, so I appreciate them telling it. And it was so heavily based in the New 52. I understand wanting to move away from that, but it was so interesting seeing these movies build off of each other. They're not like, they weren't, what I liked is they weren't necessarily like the Avengers franchise, right? Where they were like so interconnected where you really needed to be watching all of them. But that if you were, there was enough there, like if you wanted to watch it on its own, they worked. But if you were watching more of them, there was things in there for you to appreciate even more. And I kind of like that. And I hope that maybe they do that again. Maybe not right away, but it was a cool idea. And I think it worked overall. Like there were some clunkers. Batman Hush is part of this world. And I hated that. So not all of them worked, but I liked them far more than I didn't for these movies. So I would love to see something like it again.
I would too. All right, well that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, I just mentioned a couple, but I just wanted to mention some of my favorite animated movies from this world. There are other animated movies that DC's done. Overall, they do some pretty great animated movies. But some of my favorites from this New 52-ish world that they made, Flashpoint is really good. It kicks this whole thing off. It's a really good story. They do the Flashpoint story the right way. Reverse Flash is a great villain in that. Justice League War, which is the one that follows up right after it, I also really like. I think it's a great adaptation of that first Justice League arc by Geoff Johns. And it also, it's a great way to... Flashpoint is really its own story. Like, it's doing Flashpoint. And right at the end, it's like, yeah, this is launching it, the New 52, in a sense. Justice League War is, it's doing what the comic did, where it's the first real film within that world where it's introducing these different characters. Justice League Dark is one that you and I reviewed. That one was really good. And there are other ones, but those were some of my favorites that I particularly enjoyed from this film universe. I liked a lot of these movies, and I thought they ended on a very high note, but I'm bummed to see it go.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about The Watchmen. Yeah, since the show won some Emmys, you got to check out the graphic novel if you haven't yet. And we actually talked about the graphic novel on episode 16 of the Earth Station DCU. Oh, long time ago, Cletus. So, check that out. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Action Comics, Aquaman, Batgirl, Dark Knight's Death Metal, Speed Metal number 1, Justice League Dark number 26, Shazam number 15, and we had another animated movie come out just a few weeks ago, Superman Man of Tomorrow. I'm wondering, I was kind of curious when I saw that, is that going to launch a new set of cartoons, or if this is just going to be a standalone on its own? Kind of curious about that, and I saw a preview for this movie today. I'm excited. It's kind of like it looks like it's about Superman before he becomes Superman, but Martian Manhunter's in it and stuff. I'm kind of interested in seeing this different take on Superman. So I don't know if you've seen anything about this movie or not.
No, I hadn't. I'll be curious to see it though.
Yeah. So after seeing the preview for it, I'm kind of excited to check it out. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.